Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
What's going on, everyone? Jurassic Views, summertime. Man, do I ever love the summertime. NBA games not on, but the pod continues. The weather is just so good. And you know, there's always rumors, speculation. The league's drama never ends, and there's always something to talk about. Today, the pleasure that I have is having a friend of mine come on the pod, a guest, but a friend, Tom Anderson on Jurassic Views today. He's one of these guys for me personally, and maybe you have a friend like this, where when he comes over and he gives his opinion, you feel like, okay, this guy might be the smartest guy in the room right now. He's kind of that for me. Tom and I will tell some stories about our NBA origins and even fan friend origins. But for now, Tom, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, fella. Lovely to be here. I don't know if I'll live up to the smartest guy in the room, but we'll see what we can do. If we can get halfway to smart, I think we're doing okay.
Nice. What's the summer been like for you, man? We've already gone through July. Some people are already talking about fall, like slow down.
It approaches.
But what's it been like for you?
Little vacation, little lower key of work, and a lot of waiting around for the Raptors to do something. But they don't seem to want to do something.
Right.
But they want to tease us with the idea that they're going to do something.
Man. This is Jedi mind tricks, Masai Ujiri at his best.
To what end, I guess? We're just going to wait, and we'll see.
It's to create the mystique, you know, continue to create the mystique.
I guess so, yeah. There could be a 14 blockbuster around the corner at any point, but...
Oh, man. Well, we're going to get to Raptors possibilities, Raptors musings and curiosities. But I wanted to ask you, man, because this is a fan podcast. You know, some podcasts are players only. We know about those, Draymond and Podcast P and others. But this is a fan first podcast, and so we'd like to talk to even guests about them being fans of the game. So, as a Raptors fan, tell me about your kind of first moment with the Raptors. How was it that you came to be a Raptors fan?
I came in a little late, not terribly late, but my brother got me into the team, and he got me in during the Purple Fever phase of the 2001 playoffs.
Okay, that's a big year.
Yeah. Vince Carter wearing the high socks and the headband, yeah. Just like JYD. So that Knicks series and then that Philly series and the fun of Vince versus Iverson. And they were both so fun. And I didn't know any better to know at that point that it was messy, ugly basketball where the teams were shooting like 32 for 85 or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's how things were in 2001.
Yeah.
And it's a prettier game now. But yeah, I've just rode them out ever since. Watched a lot of ugly, ugly, ugly basketball. Then eventually the We the North era came around. Mm. It's been fun and now less fun and we're hoping for better days again. But,
after 2001 was like one of those peak years for the Raptors.
Yeah. I came in naive thinking it was all uphill, right? It was people all talked about, in the kind of dumb, new to the NBA fans that we would say things like, well, Vince could be like Jordan, but he's already got the fadeaway without knowing anything beyond that. So, yeah, not realizing that it was not a super talented roster beyond Vince. Good veteran players, I guess, back then, but not no high end guys coming around the corner with McGrady just at the door.
Ah, oh, man.
And then Vince didn't want to stick around once Bosch came in. And yeah, and the doldrums of those mid-2000s, hoping Andrea Bargnani would be something, and believing, despite the fact that he most certainly was not going to be something.
No, he was not Dirk Nowitzki coming through that door.
No, I remember. Do you remember this play? I must have played this YouTube video so many times. It just gave you faith and hope in this magical person that Andrea was. When he was a rookie, there was a fast break against the Hawks.
Okay.
And I don't remember who threw him the pass, but he was up front in the fast break. It was that old, like, Joe Johnson, Joe Smith Hawks team.
Okay.
Andrea caught the ball. He was too far under the basket to go up, and he was in full stride. And in one catch, it was like a touch pass. He passed it between his own legs, behind himself, to a trailing Bosch, who caught it as an alley-oop. And he didn't stuff it, because I think Josh Smith fouled him.
Okay.
But it was like the most, it spoke to, we believed in Andrea. I don't know if you did.
Right.
But he had like these magical flashes of promise, and then consistently did none of it. But... for a quarter or 2 minutes at a time.
Wow.
He could do things.
He had one Jokic possession.
That's right. Jokic, 7 or 8 Dirk possessions. Occasionally he would throw a nice high-low dart, I remember, to like an Amir Johnson or a Bosch or something under the basket. But yeah. No. We don't have to relive.
Man.
Yeah, they were grim. It was, again, naivete. Ignorance of what good basketball actually was.
Right.
You talked yourself into that they were just around the corner. One, like, we were starting Jelani McCoy at center or something like that.
Jamario Moon.
Oh, yeah, starting small forward.
Shoot.
Leaning heavily on Roko Jukic. some rough teams in there.
Yeah, anytime I read stuff on Twitter or anytime I hear a podcast with guys who are like, you know, they've been fans for the last like 10, 12 years. I'm like, you guys don't know how bad that gets.
I know. I don't know why I hung on.
Yeah.
It was like,
right.
I don't know. I convinced myself so many times that if they just made this trade, they could figure it out or nailed this draft pick. And, you know, and before Masai, felt like they never nailed a draft pick unless it was in the top 10. Well, I don't think they had a second rounder who was good. Maybe Matt Bonner? That's about it. Right?
Yeah, that's a stretch too.
Yeah. It just never happened. So all of a sudden in the Masai era that we were getting guys like Norm or Fred VanVleet or whatever it was.
Right.
It felt like magic. Yeah.
Sheesh. Wow. Well, we'll definitely not stay in those days because that's a darkness that I don't want to bring into my summer.
Yeah. It's a good reminder of the things have been bad over the last year. Yeah.
Now, you and I met seems like, you know, 11, 12 years ago.
That might be right, yeah.
And I didn't know you were an NBA fan for at least a good year.
Okay.
After we met. And then finally, you know, our schedules aligned like the stars, mm-hmm. some would say.
Sure.
And our first game that we got to watch together that I remember, anyways, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm not going to. You're going Spurs Heat?
Spurs Heat Game 6 2013 Finals.
I don't know if that was the first one.
Okay.
But it might have been, and that was...
It was up there.
It was such a magical, insane game I mean, people talk about that as the greatest playoff game ever.
Right, right.
You know, I don't know. I don't have any kind of memory to the 70s and whatever. Like Boston.
Right, right.
Like a triple over.
Yeah.
But my goodness, that game was nuts. Yeah, we watched it in the packed sports bar.
Real sports. Doesn't that's even right. exist anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
50-foot screen or something ridiculous.
The like that. One. Yeah, totally not my kind of scene normally, but it was so much fun to watch that game.
There's a lot of shots that happened around us, not between us,
yes.
but around us yeah. that night.
Yeah, the shot making down the stretch, people went nuts for. Like, I remember Tony Parker hitting a step back three with like a minute and a half left or something. And then he hit that little floater where he pump faked on him and it went bananas. And then the Ray Allen shot was just absolute madness.
Yeah.
I think you were one of the few Heat backers at that point. It was pretty heavy San Antonio.
Yeah. I don't know why I was going for the Heat, because I'm sure the year before and the year before that, when they made the finals against the Mavs and the Thunder, I would have been cheering against them. But I guess it was just like, I've seen too much of Pop and Timmy.
Yeah, you might have been more of a LeBron defender against. We were all a little addled of like, this guy's a villain. He's doing,
right.
you know.
Right after the decision.
And now like a decade away from that, it's just like, well, he was on a pretty terrible Cleveland team.
Right.
Maybe he shouldn't have made a TV show, but it's not that big of a deal.
Right, right.
It's fine. He was a free agent. He left in free agency. That's what you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, if we burned jerseys after every free agent left us,
Ooh,
you know, yeah. there wouldn't be too many jerseys left.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to start it. And now we kind of have a tradition to at least see one finals game together every year. Some years are easier than others to watch, but it's fun, man. It's fun to have gone on this decade now journey of watching the NBA finals.
Same, always a good time.
My friend, let's change gears.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the Toronto Raptors. The other day, I sat down and had an episode with co-host Courtney Wright, and we had to, for a little minute, talk about the season, because it seems like it was years ago, because we've wanted more distance from it.
That's very true.
Have you recovered from the season that was a 41-41 season in the 22-23 Raptors season?
I think I've recovered. I don't know if I've recovered to the extent that I'm ready to believe fully again, but a little bit.
Good.
Like, I still, it was such a weird experience because they just never played like themselves. They used to be a team that would out hustle everybody, and they would play smart, and whatever their limitations, they would drive other teams crazy and give them all they could handle and be in any game with anybody. And last year it was just the opposite. Any good team, they just rolled over, it seemed like. Any bad team, they would kind of play with their food. Kind
right.
of, it was just grimy and ugly, and it just all collided in whether it's, you know, Nick Nurse playing guys heavy, heavy minutes and a defensive system that demands like max effort or it's not going to work at all. So guys hit the wall. Freddie and Gary Trent Jr. going into just horrendous shooting slumps for the first 2 months.
Holy cow.
And then it was sunk from then on. And then it just looked like everybody hated each other. After the first couple of months, and it was just grimy, and I really thought we were in for a partial teardown at least.
Right.
But they pivoted and went the other way on us. And, you know, maybe there's some good with that. I think trading for Jakob was a fair price,
mm-hmm.
what they gave up to the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with the free agent cost too. I think $20 million a year for him is fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Doesn't bother me at all, especially with the cap going up. He's too good and smart of a player to not pay, and certainly to lose would have been a disaster. But yeah, no, it when Freddie walked in free agency, you know, I think like nobody was happy with the off season either, right?
Right.
If you're, you know, even if you're a hopeful fan, or if you're a pessimistic fan, or if you're a let's run it back fan, or a let's tear it down fan, none of those will really work. Like if you're a let's tear it down fan.
Yeah,
we have these pie in the sky visions of, hey, maybe Portland will trade the three.
Right.
And, you know, you get a blue chip player, and not happening. It was never going to happen.
Right.
But we talked ourselves into it. If you're a run it back fan, Freddie leaving is just,
right.
It's just a real punch where it's, you know, I think Schroeder is a good player, but he's not Freddie.
No.
And so, yeah, we'll see. It's.
That's what we're at. We'll see.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh, man. Well, I guess you've kind of outlined pretty clearly your general thoughts and feelings about this roster for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, what do you like on this roster? Maybe from like makeup of guys, like fit with guys. Or maybe individual guys. What do you like? Who do you like?
You know what? As gloomy as it's kind of been, I kind of like a lot on the roster.
Okay.
Like, I like a lot of the individual talent. I think as a group, I love the positional size everybody has.
Yeah.
I'm going into this. My expectation, if the roster is what it is now, when the season starts, I'm assuming Gary's going to start.
Mm-hmm.
As the fifth starter.
Yeah. I would agree with you.
And would have Dennis coming off the bench.
Yeah.
You know, which is a weird kind of point guard mix. Maybe he'd bring the ball up a little bit. A lot of Scotty bringing the ball up and getting into the offense. Or just maybe they can bring in some of Nurse's everybody grab and go. When you have that many talented guys who can take a rebound. And like, to not do that with Siakam would be kind of madness, right?
Yeah.
When he's that skilled.
Oh, yeah.
So I love the positional size. I think as a defense, especially if they're a defense that plays more conservatively, I think they can really cause teams problems. I like, again, last season notwithstanding, I think the general effort level and character of the guys, not that the character was bad last season, you know, they're decent fellows by all accounts.
Yeah.
But the effort level wasn't max high last year.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, they are a hard playing group, I think. Like, basically 1 through 15 on the roster. Like, Masai doesn't really pick up guys who are sleepy types.
Right.
Like, Pascal plays hard. Scotty plays hard. OG plays hard. Gary is not... He's a bit of a smooth fella, not a sort of frenetic player, but he gives a good effort.
Right.
I think Dennis too. I think Jack. Obviously, a guy like Boucher is just all effort. That's how he's an NBA player.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that. I think there's opportunities for within the offense of having screening. And I think there is an opportunity for kind of like there's an old Bob Ryan phrase of like calibration.
Mm.
You know, have you heard him talk about this before?
No.
So like just like that there's a natural pecking order to the team.
Right.
Where we didn't have that last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was like there were five guys on the floor last year
who
kind of all felt like they could be the number one. And that quickly didn't pan out, right? Like Gary can't be the number one. Freddie shouldn't be the number one.
Right.
OG's not there. Scotty isn't there yet. Pascal, sure, but he's not even a supernatural one. But, you know, like the best kind of calibration I can think of for the Raptors would be the title team, where it was totally natural.
Right.
Kawhi up top. Siakam as a mismatch hunter and just brilliant guy. And then all these catch and shoot options, all these passers who could juice the offense. So I think in a weird way with Freddie gone, in that vacuum, it might kind of end with Yak on the team too, where he's a natural just facilitator, finisher, offensive rebounder. I think it could work a little bit that better that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are my main positives, those sort of things.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, man. I was saying to Courtney the other day that you're taking one guy out of the equation, you know, one of those giants who needs to eat a lot, you know, and that makes a difference. Remember what?
Goodness gracious. Thanks.
Yeah, man. So Tom, tell me, you've spelled out here quite articulately what you like. Give us kind of the things you don't like about this roster, or maybe even if you want to go so far, who don't you like? Maybe for fit, maybe redundancy. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. There's no who I don't like really in it. Like I like the roster.
You don't need beef with anyone.
I don't think so. Shooting's the easy one to point to.
Yeah.
Everybody points to it, and rightly so. Like it's an issue. I think anytime if your main hubs of your offense are going to be Scotty and Pascal, that's limiting in and of itself. And then you have a non-shooting big in Pirtle, like a complete non-shooting big in Pirtle. Right. It gets tough pretty quick.
Like Coloco looks like a better shooter.
That's right.
Option.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Coloco could theoretically, 3 years down the line, you could see him hitting
right
a three a game.
Maybe, right, right.
Half a three a game.
Yeah, whatever, yeah, yeah. Right?
It's possible. Whereas Pirtle, it's just, you know, that train has sailed. So, yeah, it's, I mean, again, back to the trade deadline, it's easy to envisage if, say, Indiana had been having a terrible year and they had moved off Miles Turner.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the trade you make instead. You know, maybe it works a bit better, but there's a little bit of, there's awkwardness there of they play fairly similarly, despite really enjoying both players. And Pascal might be my favorite Raptor ever.
Mm.
There is just a given internal issue. So shooting and then guard depth is another obvious easy one. Again, if we're going back to Gary as the starter, that means they have like one point guard on the roster who they're or at least one point guard in their 9-10 man rotation who they're trusting. That's not a lot. And then obviously the other end of it is there are kind of too many fours or four types.
Mm.
To the point that it creates a little bit of a logjam when you're kind of mapping out what the roster is going to look like or who you're going to play. It gets pretty, the minutes get tight in a hurry, right? Like you got Boucher, Precious. You want to find minutes for Coloco to see if he can pan out and become a good pro, become a good backup center. Which
yeah.
I think he can.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, they just picked up Jalen McDaniels. I think he's more of a 3-4 type again. Grady's coming along. He's not a four, definitely, but he's not a two guard either. He's going to be a forward, it feels like. So, yeah, it just gets tight. So they need somebody who can run around screens on defense, get small, and they need somebody who can initiate attacks off the dribble. In a reliable way. And so that's kind of where I'm at. Like it's nothing groundbreaking for either of those, right? Like shooting and guard play. We've known that for 2 years now.
Yeah, at least.
And it's only a bigger problem since Freddie left too. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that gets us to the curious section of the roster. And this is where I'll kind of insert my own thoughts here on the roster itself. I'm not saying that I like the roster in general. I'm not saying I don't like the roster in general. I think that there's lots of ways it can go. And as you said, we'll see. But the one area that I'm curious about, of course, has to center around Scotty and Pascal, because right now those seem to be, you know, the guy who is the best player in the team in Pascal and the guy who could be possibly the best team down the road in Scotty. And people have been trying to like think of who do they as individuals play like, And then is there a team that has two similar guys like that on it? And people were trying to rack their brains around, like, currently, does that exist? And the closest thing that I could find, not that it's like an exact replica by any stretch of the imagination, but the closest tandem was the 93-94 Bulls when Jordan was not around. And you had Pippen and Kukoc.
Oh, wow. Going way back.
Now, obviously, Scottie, Pippen, and Kukoc were more seasoned as individuals combined than Pascal and Scottie. Scottie's only going into his third year. And they definitely had better shooting. But I think from overall skills and how they could play the game with their size as decision makers and distributors, I think those two guys give us some sort of window. Any thoughts on that?
That's interesting. I mean,
can we have the triangle offense?
Maybe. Yeah. We haven't seen that work too long. It was 10 years or something.
Yeah, that's right.
They were trying to institute that in New York. I mean, yeah, modern NBA is a different thing. But I think, I don't know if shooting is as big of a red flag issue as it's made out to be.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong about this and I'm just being overly optimistic. I like the idea of, I've heard a lot of people talk about since Darko got hired, of a ball movement offense, but also a high cutting offense with guys cutting along like those 45 degrees.
Yeah.
In the arc and just pulling the defenses that way. There's a lot of good, smart cutters on the team.
Yeah, definitely.
Who, if they're not burned out from playing the absolute most demanding defensive style in the league that they're playing last year,
yep,
and playing 40 minutes a night,
yeah,
I think they could. Because part of the issue last year too was the offense looked ugly because they were just jogging through their sets. Like, they didn't have legs to like sprint off cuts. You look at like Miami in the finals and the way they were running their actions. Duncan Robinson was at a full sprint.
Yeah.
The court.
Right.
Like, and it causes panic. And obviously he's a shooter again.
Yeah.
But
he's not fast.
No, he's not fast, but he's going as fast.
Yes.
As he can.
Yes, for sure.
And the Raptors were not. So,
yeah.
So effort on that end. I also I keep thinking about risk. They played such a risky defense where it's, if they didn't get the steal or tip a pass and get it out of bounds, they were in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of times, they're on 2-on-1s, 3-on-2 in the half court. That's not a recipe for success, right?
No, that's right. It just again and again, they were getting in spots where they were in full scramble mode.
Yeah.
And so if you can dial back the risk on that end, but probably bring the risk up on the offensive end. Get the ball whipping around a little bit more. And if you turn it over a little bit more, you can kind of live with that. If you're putting the opposing defense in tough spots. Goodness gracious.
No worries. It's easy to edit, man.
That's good. I'll give you a few spots to do it. We're only halfway through page one. So I want to see more. I want to see more risk with the offense that they're willing to live with the turnovers. Freddie, for all his good qualities as a point guard, could over dribble.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think he is a selfish player, as he's been called. I don't think that's silly. But I think he is a bit of a coach's dream in a negative sense, in the same way Calderon was. Jose Calderon, every coach loved him because he would not turn the ball over and he would make safe, capable passes.
Yeah.
But he was never forcing the action. Right. Like he was never forcing defenses to scramble. He was never, you know, getting inside and drawing three guys to him or whatever.
Yeah.
They need a little bit more juice and a little bit more action, I think, on offense. So if they can get there, that would be a win to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously we don't we don't know a lot about Darko. He's never been a head coach. We have, like, you know, YouTube instructional videos. We have interviews that he's done. We have some articles that he's written. We can kind of see some maybe similarities between teams he was the assistant coach on where you think he interjected some stuff, but he's never had his full team where he's putting all his fingerprints and then encouraging and inspiring in certain ways. And I think that, you know, I think needs to play out a bit before we see what's there. But certainly, whatever was happening last year, and there's probably layers to what was happening last year, but it wasn't working.
yeah, that's amazing.
And so we should have like a little more hope going into this year, despite Fred not being with us going into this year.
Yeah, not to hang it all on Fred. That's right. I think, you know, vibes has been said many times over the last year of the vibes kind of going skunky.
Yeah.
If they can get a bit better, that might just be a good a bonus. And just guys feeling good, guys sharing the ball. I think that they have to run still. That's no secret, right? Like, they're, if they can get out of the half court by being in the full court and, you know, getting a bucket in 4 seconds, then that's absolutely what they need to do. But it can't be the only source of offense is full court basketball. They're going to have to figure out ways to score.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at the Lakers in the playoffs at the start of the playoffs this year, you know, they're in the play-in game against, I think, Minnesota. And then they move on and they play Memphis, who everyone thought, you know, that was a death trap for Memphis. Then they go on to play Golden State and finally Denver, who wins the title, for heaven's sakes. Oversized team.
Yeah.
A lot of questions around shooting.
Yep, that's right.
Smart playmaking, bigger guys. Obviously, no one on the Raptors is even LeBron James at 38 LeBron James.
No.
His IQ is through the roof. But there's some similarities with that team in terms of what they have to do to create success for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, they've got to be a high-level, focused defensive team first and foremost.
Yeah.
I think they can do that, and they should be able to do that. But we've got to see it again because, you know, when you don't show up for a whole year,
yeah,
it leaves the question of are you up for this? I think Yak as just such a capable backline, just kind of pro basketball player, will be a real big help for that after just not having size in the middle for a couple of years before that. So I'm hopeful on that end. But we'll see. I mean, nobody really talks about Darko as a defensive coach. So
right.
That's another big question mark, right? Like, everybody talks about, you know, his offensive ideas or whatever and his developmental skills. But we'll see what he's like on defense. We'll see what I imagine he'll be a little bit more conservative, a bit more traditional, not give up all the corner threes that the Raptors were giving up over the last few years, protect the rim, and don't be as steel hunting happy as they were in the Nick Nurse era, or at least in the later stages of the Nick Nurse era. But yeah, we'll see.
Are you curious about Scottie Barnes without Fred VanVleet? Are you curious that maybe his rise has a little more liberty now that the leader, right, at least the emotional intellectual leader is now gone. Are you curious about what Scotty will do this season?
It might help. Yeah. Yeah. Again, yeah, maybe it's, that's the calibration thing I was talking about there, or the idea of that, that, if it's a bit more tipped into his bucket, you're running a little bit more through him. I think more just needs to be not in a, like, he's got to step up kind of way, but more demanded of him of like, here's the ball, go make some plays. Or when Pascal's got the ball or, you know, shooter or whatever, that's an active Scotty is a good Scotty. He's such a smart player, not just in a passing way. He's so good at like knowing when to just flash into the middle and get, you know, put that little floater up from 8 feet that he can put up, or little jump hooks and things like that. Or he can make little tic-tac passes. He screens well, he cuts well. He just does all these sorts of things that, yeah, I think him, maybe it is leadership, just him taking a little bit more of that on himself of, as a night in, night out thing, I've got to be there to produce at a high level. And that, you know, expectations going from there. Yeah, I think that's right.
Besides Scotty, and there's going to be a lot of attention on Scotty this season, and rightfully so. You know, rookie of the year, fourth pick in the draft. I think, as you said, with his IQ, with his leadership, with his juice, he's gonna be a guy who takes a bigger leap this season. Anybody else on the roster who you think stands out to you as, yeah, this is likely gonna be their year, or the potential is certainly there
as a jump. As making a like a meaningful step forward, I guess. Precious is an easy guy to point to, just because of the Precious is so freaky athletic, and you can see, and skill too. Like you can see the tools of. There are times, you know, he catches the ball, or gets a rebound, and he's flying up the court, and you know he puts a spin move on somebody, or in and out dribbles on a dude. And you know, throws down just a crazy dunk. And then there are other times where he kind of gets to the rim and has no plan at all and just throws a little floater that hits the underside of the rim. And like, it's just a roller coaster with Precious. But you can, almost in the same way you could see it with Norm years ago. Norm was a guy who had some brutal years, right?
Yeah.
Like his third year, people thought he was just untradeable, that you would have, because they signed him to a contract before that offseason. He had such a rough year, and it was being talked about you'd have to attach a first round pick just to get off of him.
Right.
But he was just a guy, he was hardworking enough, which I think Precious is. He's smart enough. But some of the intricacies of NBA basketball, which is super complicated and super hard, they just take time to learn. So I think Precious is a guy worth being patient with, and worth just getting those incremental improvements so that he can, I guess he needs to walk before he can run, because he wants to do everything all the time. He wants to fully take over a game. And you know, some nights he can, but making those little solid improvements where, again, like Norm, where he can just find, I'm coming off a curl and this is the way I get to the rim, or, you know, just little finishing packages that Norm developed, where he went from a bad finisher at the rim to a guy who shot like 70% within the restricted area, right? Like, I think Precious can make some improvements like that. And he's a special defender already. I guess the other guy would be Coloco. I like Coloco.
Yeah.
I think he passes well. I think he's a good rim protector. If he can just finish a little bit better on the basket, if he can, I think he'll stay out of foul trouble better, because I think part of that's the rookie whistle. 7-footers in the NBA who are in the league for the first time do not get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Fertile. Great example.
That was awful when he was a rookie, right? Like, he got no calls. And then over time, it gets a little better.
I'm sure Pirtle, you know, took Christian out for lunch one time and said, "Listen, man, let's go over some plays that I had call against me."
Yeah, no, it's brutal. And like, I mean, vets are smart too on making it look like they're not fouling when they are fouling. Like Marc Gasol was the opposite for the Raptors, right? He was a vet who kind of body checked somebody every time they came into the lane. But I think because he can't jump,
right,
it didn't really look like a foul. And he'd throw his arms straight up, but he would kind of always lean in
and
knock a guy off course, and they couldn't finish around him. And it's like, wow, that's Marc Gasol. That's
right.
Former Defensive Player of the Year. He's just making a great play.
Right.
So, yeah, when the respect gets a little bit more in Christian's favor, maybe that'll help.
Yeah, that's fair, man. We did talk about Darko, and I think it's appropriate, knowing, you know, the what ifs and we'll sees that are still to come, to talk about him, because we did need a change.
Yes.
Nick Nurse had run his course. As I said, and I'm sure other people have too, his personal ambitions seem to get in the way of the team, you know, focus and goals. Certainly overplaying guys is one of those areas that, you know, showed up. When Darko was announced as the coach, did you know anything about him? Was this a huge surprise? Was this out of left field? What were your initial thoughts when Darko was announced as the head coach?
I didn't know anything about him.
Okay.
Except, you know, reading one of those articles where 9 coaches are mentioned connected to the Raptors. And, you know, you saw his name and he's an assistant coach. Just like they had guys from, I can't even remember the names now, as much as this was ingrained in me a couple of months ago. You know, there was a guy from Sacramento. There was a guy from Phoenix. And they all kind of buzz away. I didn't know anything about him. It felt Raptors-y in the sense that, like, it's the kind of thing Masai does.
Right.
Like, I don't know why everybody freaks out when a coaching search takes this long with Masai, because it happened the same way with Nick Nurse. They took, like, a full 2 months to pick Nick Nurse as their next coach. And then everybody was like, and you're just taking the guy who was your assistant? Like, couldn't you have done that faster? But they're super thorough, I think.
Yeah.
That's how they approach it. I think that it tends to pay off well for them because they have specific questions they want answered, and they go through a long, slow process, and they end up answering them. Nick Nurse, I agree, he had run his course. I think there's some stuff like at the communication end that just didn't seem to be working at all. Like when you heard quotes, I remember near the end of the year, somebody getting a quote out of Gary where Nick Nurse had criticized him pretty pointedly earlier in the season about, you know, if he doesn't do the high activity defensive things he was doing the year before, he doesn't fit us, was basically the gist of the quote, right? And Gary's quote later in the year was, yeah, he didn't say that to me directly. That just kind of, you know, that's not a good way to, your job is a communicator, as a coach, right? First and foremost. So yeah, that had definitely run its course. As you know, despite the fact, again, he's the best coach in Raptors history.
Yeah.
We all know.
Hands down.
Yeah. And I think Dwayne Casey was a very good coach. I think he gets, you know, the side eye a little bit too often from Raptors fans. He helped build up where we got to. But Nick Nurse was the best. Yeah, so it was a surprise in the sense I didn't know who he was, felt Raptors-y. And it's the kind of thing I like too. I like a younger, kind of fresh voice coach. I didn't really want to retread.
Right.
I would have been happy with some of them. You know, had they hired Frank Vogel maybe before Phoenix got him, that might have been cool. I would have been fine with Kenny Atkinson, somebody like that. There were some other guys. But a young guy who's dedicated his life to coaching, I like that too. I'm not super big on the ex-player as a coach. I feel like
the ex-player knows more because they played the game.
Yeah, I don't really buy it. I think Steve Kerr has obviously been brilliant, but he also spent a lot of time working in front offices.
Right.
And really, I think, probably thought a lot about the type of coach he wanted to be before he was there. I mean, I don't love Jason Kidd as a coach.
Right. Steve Nash.
Steve Nash. That's the way he panned out. Yeah. Maybe he got thrown under the bus a little bit.
Right. For sure.
Dysfunctional situation, but still. I like guys. I mean,
Ty Lue might be the best.
Yeah. Ty Lue's a good one. But he spent a bit of time as an assistant too.
Yeah.
The job's hard. Like,
yeah.
I think it takes time to learn. So I don't like the idea of throwing somebody straight into it just because they're a big name and a big personality. I mean, the best coach in the league is a guy who was a video coordinator and worked his way up. And just so I tend to trust those kind of folks more, almost, who have just put the time in year in, year out. And like Nick Nurse, who just, you know, grinded and grinded for years on becoming the best kind of coach he could be. So I'm up for it. I'm excited for it. I think he could be a really good fit.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, as you said, very Raptors-y to take a guy that really nobody knows. Zaya and I had a great laugh because when it was announced that Darko was the coach, because there was all this speculation from Raptors journalists and podcasters trying to claim who they knew. They had an inside angle. And it was like, no, you knew nothing. Masai keeps it tight. The BlackBerry is still secure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they talked about, you know, Sergio Scariolo was a lock for the job.
Right,
I remember hearing in a couple of weeks beforehand that this whole process was just trying to nail down him as the next coach, as, you know. And I'm sure maybe they were really close with him. I think that he went through the multiple rounds of interviews. I think they really respect him, but it just, they're going to make a decision based on their very specific criteria.
Yeah.
And that's just what they do.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Is there anybody on this Raptors lineup that you think benefits the most? Or a few guys who benefit the most because of having Darko, but also, I don't know, maybe having a new coach who happens also to be a first-time coach who's young?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the easy joke is Malachi, right?
Poor guy, man.
He did not get
anyone drafted in the Tampa Tank season. Like, no, that is tough, man. Yeah,
that's really tough. I mean, they played a style that did not fit his strengths. Like, he's a pick-and-roll point guard. They did not run pick-and-roll. They tried to make him into something else, which he wasn't able to do so far. But, you know, hopefully that guy gets some more run at an NBA level and can figure out his spot in the league, because he seems like a good kid by all accounts.
Right.
Yeah, that's an easy joke. I think Precious had such a weird role last year again. I think maybe that takes a little bit of roster tinkering to iron it out, because they might just have too many guys at his position. But I think he'd be a good one. And who knows, maybe Scotty too. Like, I don't know what players always say the right things for the most part about their coach. And maybe it's true. Maybe, you know, Scotty and Nick had a good relationship. You know, I don't know otherwise by any means. I think a coach that, again, is a little bit less restrictive on, or not even less restrictive on offense. Nurse was almost too free-flowing on offense.
Lazy
where fan. It's just like, yeah, just like, hey, we're just going to roll out the ball out there and, you know, do our best, not do our best, but, you know, just whoever has a shot can take it.
Right.
A little bit more structure might help Scotty. Just to be firmly put into a role of, we're expecting you to make plays and these sorts of plays and these sorts of reads. That could be good. But it's probably mostly the young guys, the Precious types, the Coloco types, the maybe if, you know, Jeff Downton makes the roster, or Malachi or whomever, maybe, you know, Grady didn't play for Nick Nurse. But I think, given his reputation, he'll give a little bit more rope to those younger fellas to try to earn a spot in the league. Oh, and Chris Boucher, I guess, too, right? Poor Chris Boucher was always, he would play out of his mind for three games in a row, and then he would have a bad game, and he'd be back in the doghouse again. You know, it was just clockwork. Which, like, the guy plays so hard. It's absurd.
And he's in every matchup, he's in a mismatch.
Yes.
Whether because of his physical size just not being big enough.
Yes.
Or he is forced to play against some speedy three who's just going to blow by him, and it's just goofy to have him cover him.
Right? That's right. And again, in a defense where they were rotating everywhere, who knows who he'd end up on. Like, it was just, it was tough. A ton was being demanded of him, and he's a pretty good third big. Like, he's a good energy offensive rebounder, finishes well. He seems to be the only player on the team who gets an inordinate amount of foul calls. I think it's because he, like, explodes sideways whenever anybody kind of puts a forearm into him, so he just gets the benefit of the doubt. But it's the guys like that. It's the bench guys, really, because we know the starters got heavy minutes last year.
Yeah, that's it. Well, right now we have a current roster. We've just signed another guy who I think is a guaranteed contract with Garrett Temple. We'll see if he stays long term. We'll see how that impacts the roster. We also signed some guys to the training camp as well. So I think we have a full 20 guys now for the training camp.
There might be 21 on the roster.
There you go. But there's always speculation.
Yeah.
And we don't shy away of speculation on this podcast. And so I'm curious to know what you've thought about the Damian Lillard rumors for this team, or maybe other rumors that have circulated about who might get traded and who might come in.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Dame. Yeah, Dame is, I love Dame. He's such a fun player. I struggle to see the fit in terms of kind of talent and timeline. There are basically two, maybe three paths. You could see that the Raptors could go to get a Dame.
Yeah.
One is you move Scotty.
Yep.
You know, he's the bluest chip prospect available.
For sure.
Much better prospect than Tyler Herro is at this point.
Right.
Right, where Tyler Herro's on his second contract already. He doesn't fit with Portland's multiple guards they have already. Whatever. Scotty's just he would be a much bigger get for Portland. So it would have to be a package like that where, and then it gets tricky because you have to add up all these salaries because Dame makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you bring it in. It's not just the Otto Porters and the Thads. You've got to bring in Boucher probably.
Yep.
Probably have to throw in Gary to make the money work.
Maybe, yeah.
So you're really thinning out your roster. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you lose the two guard that can play alongside Dame. It's the same thing that when the Durant rumors were going on last year to me. It's not that I think Scotty is going to be as good as either. Guys,
sure.
It's that if it goes belly up and you traded the best young guy,
right,
that hurts bad. Like you have dug a big hole for yourself. If you know they trade for Dame, gave up Scotty and Gary and whatever else, and then all of a sudden, you know, Dame isn't quite Dame.
Right, right.
You know, little guards, if they lose a little bit of athleticism, it can go downhill quick.
Yep.
All of a sudden the shooting's a little bit off, or they're not finishing at the rim as much anymore, or they're a bigger defensive liability than even they were in the past.
Yep.
He wasn't a great defender. So it's the risk is just way too high for me to stomach at that.
Yep.
And particularly as the roster could be really good with, you know, Pirtle, OG, Pascal, and Dame. That's, you know, that's a nice four.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if it's title worthy for necessarily though, right?
Right.
That's a big ask. And you've also moved out all of those like mid-sized contracts that you would need to package with picks or whatever,
yep,
to go get more players around the trade deadline if you're trying to make a push. So I don't see it from that angle. The other angle is the Pascal angle, where, yep, that would have to be a three-team trade of some variety, right? Where Portland doesn't want a 29-year-old Pascal Siakam, I don't think, for Dame, especially who's on a lock year. So it's a thing of like, could you convince, you know, Atlanta, who's been rumored to want him, to send a bunch of stuff of picks and prospects Portland's way? And it just gets complicated. I like, what's the Brian Windhorst line? It's like a three-team trade is a no-team trade, he always says, because it's like, they're just hard to pull off.
Right.
Like, getting everybody like to agree on the little minutia of trades just doesn't happen. And even within that framework, you'd have to give up more from Toronto's side, I think. Mm. I think Dame's got a bit more value than Pascal. A little bit older, and, you know, maybe a bad contract on the back end of it, but he is locked up still, and he's just a higher level player too.
Right.
So he's a bigger name. So you're really cutting yourself short then, right? If you're giving up your best player to get another best player, and then giving up picks as well. And then, man, that's really hoping Scotty turns the corner fast.
Yeah.
So I don't really see it in either case. I think if they were going to do the Scotty version, that train has sailed, because I think you would have had to couple it in with like the Fred VanVleet outgoing, kick a couple of second round picks to Houston or whatever, so they'd cooperate in the deal and turn it into a three teamer. But
yeah, I don't see it. Well, Dame has been probably the only big player mentioned with the trade, but it is one of those options or possibilities, I guess you could say. Not that Masai and Bobby really want to do it necessarily, but there is the stay the course. There is the blow it up and build around Scotty. And then there's the, you know, let's see if we can, you know, get a big player like a Dame to come our way. Of those three options, which way are you hoping that they go?
I don't know if I hope this. Because I love Pascal. He is like he's probably, again, my favorite Raptor ever. Love the way he's played. Love his growth curve and his story.
Yeah,
he's so great. There, because you kind of have to hold on to Scotty, because it makes no sense to me to move him.
Mm-hmm.
So you are kind of building with him as your fulcrum in mind.
Right.
For the next, you know, however many years. I think, so I think moving Pascal, there is some sense to that. But there's only sense to it if you get the kind of package that you would need to get. I don't know how likely that is. I think of teams like that have been rumored within the Pascal chase. There's like Indiana, Atlanta, OKC are the ones that I've heard that make sense to me, where you have incredibly dynamic guards on like sort of 40-ish win teams, I think, in each of those cases. Atlanta's got two of them. You know, Tyrese Halliburton on Indiana is incredible. And then you have a great center who would pair really well with Pascal. It makes so much sense to me. And then SGA on OKC is
right.
Just absurdly good. So teams like that, I just think like, man, if I'm running one of those teams, I would push hard to get a Pascal Siakam.
Right.
I don't really, like, you don't have to give up everything. If you're
Oklahoma City has like 1,000 draft picks to be in.
Yeah, that's right. Like, there's nobody's saying, you know, you have to give up Chet Holmgren or
right.
I don't think they would give up Chet. I don't think they would give up, definitely not SGA.
No.
They wouldn't give up Giddy, I don't think. or maybe not even Jalen Williams.
Right.
But they still have stuff beyond that.
Yeah, that's definitely
super enticing. And if you're that, if you have like four, I just named,
yeah,
really good prospects slash players, a bunch of picks, even if you trade a bunch of picks, you'll still have a bunch of picks.
Yeah.
And you can get a guy who's made multiple All-NBA teams.
Yeah.
Who would fit brilliantly with your best player, who plays super hard, who plays both ways. Like, if all you're saying is we don't know if he'd stay, like, if you're that good of a team, I think you could convince him to stay, and you're a good organization. Like, I don't see Pascal as, like, a flight risk, really, for teams. Like,
right.
He's not making eyes on LA or anything like that to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So, yeah, if I'm Toronto, though, you only move him probably if the package makes sense or if you're super freaked out that he's going to leave, which
right.
is, you know, we saw it, not that Freddie was going to get anywhere close to a star level package.
Right. 13th highest playing in the league.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, at the trade deadline, what was being offered for Freddie that we could, like,
right.
not a lot, right? Like, it was some, like, I think Brandon Boston or something like that was about it from the Clippers. So I don't think any first-rounders were coming for Freddie. So that one hurt. But, I guess it'd be a disaster to lose Pascal for nothing. So that's the worry. But if they can get him on a good contract, as weird as it is, it's not weird, but as, you know, as structurally strange for the modern NBA as it is for Siakam and Scotty, I don't know. It's worth a shot because just letting talent go for a subpar package isn't getting you anywhere either. Right?
Like, yeah.
That's the old Orlando move. Before Orlando's current management, they would, you know, people talk about, you know, giving or holding on to your own assets too tightly. Orlando held on to them way too loosely, and they let, like, Victor Oladipo go and JJ
right.
Redick go, and just, like, all these Tobias Harris, all these good players go for almost nothing, and they didn't overvalue their assets, but they sure didn't get anything back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I find it incredible, and I think this is just like the state of fans when it comes to sports. They're so dissatisfied if their team is not a contender, or their team doesn't have the most, like, electric player
yeah.
in the league, right? Like, John Morant is an electric player. What the hell have the Grizzlies done? They've done nothing. And are they going to do anything this year because Marcus Smart came to the team? I don't think so. Like, I still think they're the fourth or fifth best team in the West come playoff time. But give them time
yeah.
to keep building, and who knows what happens, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Raptors are in a situation, as you used the phrase, we'll see. I think that's a good phrase for this team. Gary is still 24 years old.
Yeah.
Scotty Barnes, I think, sometime this week turns 22. OG Anunoby is only 26 this year. Pascal, as much as people want to say he's on the back end of his career somehow, the guy's 29. LeBron just showed us at 38 you can still play the game at a high level.
I think Pascal is going to age fine.
Too. Yeah.
He works so hard on his body and his craft. I think, like, when his athleticism starts to wane a little bit, I think he'll just slow it down a little bit, play in the post a little bit more. He's crafty. His footwork's great. Like, yeah, he'll do fine, I think. In the same way, DeMar DeRozan just added new little wrinkles to his game every single year, kept going. And, you know, people said, you know, oh, non-shooters don't age well. DeMar aged great.
Yeah.
He figured out all those little wrinkles. Pascal's gotten so much better at, like, reading the back line of the defense and making those little pocket passes. He's a really smart player. He works really hard. Yeah, he's not going to fall off a cliff anytime soon. And you're right, too. Like, I think it's just, I don't know, if they can rebuild the talent pipeline of, like, the way it used to be of like G League to the big club, getting guys good again. That's the main reason Darko is exciting to me.
Yeah.
If they can get that rolling again. And then just incremental improvements. Those go a long way. And we've seen the team build from the middle before and end up being a powerhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the only way. Like we've seen, as you've said, a team like Orlando, who have, you know, tossed talent around easily. We've seen like this trust the process, but then don't trust the process happen. And then there's been implosions. I think building chemistry, building an identity, believing in your guys, and having depth is kind of, you know, the best recipe when you don't have a Kevin Durant on your team, or yeah, when you don't have a Steph Curry, you know, these generational talents. And let's be honest, the only way we get to Steph being a generational talent is because someone was patient with Steph Curry for 4 seasons.
That's right.
Right?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. So I honestly said on the podcast the other day with Courtney, I might be delusionally optimistic. But, you know, when I hear Mikal Bridges say that OG's the next guy to take, you know, an explosive step forward, I'm like, well, we already got an All-NBA guy.
Yeah.
We've got a guy who won Rookie of the Year. Now you're telling me that OG could do what Mikal Bridges did last season when he got traded to Brooklyn. Like, there's too much talent to be sad.
No, that's right. Yeah, it is not the dog days of the Raptors fan. There's a lot of good players. They do seem kind of sneaky deep all of a sudden.
Yeah, they do.
Maybe I'm delusionally optimistic on that because they sure didn't look deep last year.
Not at all.
But as many good players up front as they have, if they have a good backup point guard in Schroeder, you know, a little bit of off the bench shooting from Grady Dick or I was going to say Otto. I think it's probably best just to assume that.
Otto's toe is going to get in the way again.
Otto's not going to play, so we don't get our feelings hurt. No disrespect to Otto, who I'm sure works very hard, but is just one of those NBA players who's got a tough man.
Mm.
But yeah, no, there's a lot to like about the team. It's not all doom and gloom. And you only move Pascal if either, again, A, you're totally terrified he's a flight risk.
Right.
And you don't think the team's going to be able to compete. And, you know, a Philly or whoever comes along and opens up the cap space and they snipe him. Or you just get knocked over with an offer of it's like,
right,
you know, the kind of Rudy Gobert getting traded to Minnesota offer where it's just, that was way too much to give up for Rudy Gobert.
Right.
Everybody knew it.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
And they really talked themselves into the value of Rudy Gobert, which he did not provide.
Yeah. No, man, I think delusionally optimistic, I'm okay with knowing that there's a lot of doom and gloom. And we are, as we said near the top, when you were going through the roster of like that 2006, 2007, 2008 Raptors teams like Bargnani, Jamario Moon, you know, no offense to Amir Johnson, but he was pretty one dimensional,
you know,
offensively for sure. Right. An older Jose Calderon, like we've got guys who can do so many things as individual. We just need a leader, a coach that is believing them and is going to have the patience with them.
Yeah.
Going to develop them, right?
I think that's right. Yeah. I think they're high character guys. They play hard. They work hard on their craft. So there's no reason to think they can't figure out some angles to be, you know, maybe the best version of the team's, of, you know, just a smidge above 500.
Right.
Maybe it's a little better than that. And I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'm, being optimistic again, or I'm definitely being optimistic again, according to most of NBA fandom. But I don't know. I think it's worth a shot because just accepting pennies on the dollar for Pascal.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. And obviously, delusionally optimistic is like a different phrase to heat culture, right? Like, and heat cultures seem to work out this past season.
Heat fans always talk themselves into that they're just around the corner, and everybody else, you know, kind of turns their noses up and thinks you guys just won 42 games, you're not doing anything, and then they do a whole lot. Yeah, it's if you play hard and you play together, it's good stuff usually happens.
Good stuff happens, man. Definitely good stuff happens. And I think that we saw, and we've seen, not just this past playoff, but in playoff, like probably the last four playoffs, we've seen all the top teams in the East, Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston, all have dents in the armor, right? All have susceptibility to being upset, to being exposed, to implode. And so
Cleveland too, as a number four seed, they did not look like a number four seed at all.
And New York is not some big powerhouse.
Nope.
You're right. So there you go. Cleveland's another one. I'm certainly not intimidated by the New York Knicks either, as much as I love me some Jalen Brunson. I do. I think we're in a good place, man. I think we got a lot to work on.
Yeah.
But we got a lot to be happy about too.
Yeah, they're a back end of the playoff hopeful kind of thing. I don't think anybody's expecting them to be a top three seed or anything
right.
like that. But that's not the worst place to be. If you know, maybe it's not Dame Lillard, but maybe somebody else opens up who we don't even think about right now.
Right, right.
That happens in the NBA. Teams hit disappointing skids and weird stuff happens, or players emerge out of nowhere who you didn't think would emerge.
Yeah, for sure. A question I like to ask, and I'll finish it here with you on the pod today. As the season is still a ways away, obviously you're going to be watching Raptors basketball next year. But is there a team, because of a certain player or the starting lineup, that you would watch besides the Raptors? Who's that must-see TV team for you during the regular season besides the Raptors?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have one so much now. I like Giannis a lot, so I'll watch some Bucks.
Okay.
Sacramento was fun this past year.
Mm-hmm.
They may be one of those teams that's due for a little bit of a step back.
Right.
Memphis was everybody's favorite sort of darling team
until
they started talking too much. And then they're everybody's least favorite team. But Dylan Brooks is gone right now, and he was one of the talkier
of the group. And he's still making cash.
Yeah, well, he sure is. Yeah, he sure is making cash. Denver's a fun team because they're weird, and Jokic is fun, and the two-man game's fun. So there's no one team. There's all five teams.
Yeah.
The NBA is fun. It's pretty diverse. As much as everybody has worried and complained about, you know, is like Morey ball or too much three-point shooting going to just
right
all even out and everybody's going to be, you know, the same tone of vanilla. I don't think that's happened at all.
There's, no.
Talent kind of always dictates how teams go, right? And so you get a weird star like a 7-footer from Eastern Europe who's the best passing big man, then like you're going to play one way. And if you have a speedy point guard like a Ja or a De'Aaron Fox, you're going to do something different. So
yeah, for sure. That's fun, man. Yeah, the league is at an all-time high, in my opinion, for talent. And it is a fun time to be an NBA fan. Tom, thank you for being on the pod. Appreciate your time being here, and look forward to watching games and you being the smartest guy in the room, man.
I don't think that's happening again, but thanks again. Thanks for having me.
Peace.